Greetings, everyone. It is now time for Marked Safe, tales of your very favorite and most beloved man-made disasters. On Marked Safe, we discuss events and details that some may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Please listen responsibly. And now, here with your hosts, Brianne and Melanie, this is Marked Safe.
It's me, stuck at three.
I didn't think we'd have you for a while.
I know. I'm a trickster.
You're a what?
I'm a trickster.
You are a trickster, you're a tease.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's start with our, again, highly temporary segment, The State of Melanie's Uterus. What's going on?
I have been stuck at 3 centimeters dilated for what now? A week?
8 days, I think.
8 days. Get this fucking baby out of me. I'm so tired of these contractions. So I'm doing a VBAC, and I'm at the point where I am ready to go into the doctor's office today and ask them to cut this baby out of me.
Oh, you poor thing. I hate this for you.
I'm super anti-C-section. I don't want another one, but right now I want one. Just give it to me.
Yeah. I mean, 8 days, it's too long.
It's too long.
Because they're pretty constant, aren't they? I mean, it's not occasional.
No, I got them. They were at like 6 minutes apart a couple days ago. And then, it's miserable. This is miserable. So we're just going to do this because I'm tired of being in bed.
Yeah, we thought we were done. We thought the maternity leave had officially started. And Melanie, I guess, is bored and miserable enough to go ahead and record one more episode.
Yeah, maybe two. Maybe two. I don't know. Might be a little more extra work for Tag to edit some.
He'll be fine.
Yeah.
He'll be fine.
Yeah. So.
I'm sorry about the last episode and the cough medicine. We have to address it.
We have to address it. I was like, I didn't know how to like segue into it.
I'll just do it because I'm the idiot.
Yeah. So what did you have your thing titled as?
Like when I have the file saved as?
Yeah.
I don't remember what I saved it as, but the audio guy and I are referring to it as the Dead Kids and Cough Syrup episode.
Oh my gosh. You are adorable, but you are a mess.
So messed up on cough medicine. And never again. I just told Melanie before we started recording that next time, if there is next time, and I've got real shitty lungs, there will be. Next time, I'm just going to cough through the whole thing because you can edit out coughing, but you can't edit out stupid. And, oh, God, I thought about almost not releasing that episode. I was such a freaking idiot.
Yeah, so it was a measurement issue. She winged it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was late. Melanie was in agony. I was like, I can't find the cup. I don't want this to take all night. So I'm just, surely I can eyeball it. No.
Don't eyeball cough medicine.
I shouldn't have eyeballed it. I should not have eyeballed it. I won't eyeball it again. In fact, I won't even take cough medicine again.
I feel like we've learned.
It was the second of two episodes.
Yeah, because we did them back to back. So it was exhausting as is.
Yeah. But no more cough medicine. Sorry about that. I'm still not 100% sure about the whether the wisdom of even releasing the Dead Kids and Cough Medicine episode for probably multiple reasons considering the title of it, but if you know what I'm talking about, I guess we did release it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so lots of lessons learned this week. You stay away from cough medicine. I'm gonna stay away from pineapple.
Yeah. And maybe your husband after this.
Yeah. Someone told me to eat pineapple, make this baby calm. That was
how'd that go?
It was a goddamn lie. Fucking shit my brains out for 2 days.
You would think that the shitting alone would do it.
No. That was our mom group. Don't get medical advice from a mom group, even if it's as harmless as pineapple.
Yeah.
And I wrote on there, I was like, I did this wrong, didn't I? Because I ate the whole thing.
What were you supposed to do?
I don't think you were supposed to eat a whole pineapple by yourself.
Oh. I mean, what are you? Are you supposed to eat the middle or something?
Yeah, I guess you're supposed to eat the core. The one part I did not eat.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I bought a pineapple to move things along with Adelaide when I came home from the hospital with her. It was still sitting on the counter making me mad. Because I ended up with a C-section.
Oh. So, but.
Yeah.
What else do we have? What else do we have? Can we talk about, we need to address another.
We do.
Okay.
We need to talk about Wally.
We have to talk about Wally. Okay. I think we totally underestimated, like, who our audience is.
Yeah.
Big time.
I think we did.
Not old ladies, not just moms. There's also Wallys.
Yeah, although thanks a lot, Wally, for thinking that our whole target audience is old ladies. I don't know about that.
Jesus. Put us in a box already, Wally.
Moms, I guess, maybe, but old ladies, calm down, Wally. So we got the best email recently. I feel like, should we just read it?
Yes, let's read it.
I feel like we can't just be like, we got an email from Wally and it was the sweetest thing and think that that's going to get it across. We're going to have to read this.
Yes.
Okay, hold on. I'm pulling it up right now. Okay, I've got it. Ready?
Ready.
It says, hello, guys. Two smiley face emojis, yellow heart emoji. You will be surprised to know I am not, in fact, a mom or an old lady or a grandma. Okay, Wally.
Do we... He's talking about me, probably.
Uh-huh. Despite the fact that I look like every one of my friend's mom's 80s high school yearbook photo. No, despite all my hobbies, including cross-stitching, embroidery, baking cookies, tending my rose bushes, and those adult coloring books that are just called adult because we're all universally ashamed of still liking coloring books for some reason, I am, in fact, a 17-year-old boy named Wally.
Oh.
I adore you guys' podcast. I love having something to listen to when doing my embroidery, and I have been so overjoyed to find your guys' podcast. I like that you guys don't only cover just one type of disasters, but whole topics and types. I didn't know podcasts with compilations of disasters was something I wanted until now, but God, I don't think I'll ever be sated now. You guys ruined me with that deep sea diving episode. It was just so good. That episode ruined me too.
Yep, same.
I love learning, so I think it's all amazing. I relate to Melanie in terms of having some crazy wild experiences. You guys are older.
Wally!
So you may go, but Wally, you're only 17. But to that I say, a 17-year-old that spends his free time doing embroidery, and I ask you to wonder all the things that could lead to a 17-year-old doing this. If you guessed narcolepsy, getting struck by lightning, still unexplained liver attempting seppuku before chilling, converting to Jewish in a neighborhood of Blue Lives Matter flags, then all of these are correct, and I will send you a packet of Gold Star stickers, my renowned snickerdoodles, and cool plant stationery.
He gets us! I want those damn snickerdoodles!
I want the stationery! I actually am a huge well of information, specifically on planes. My parents met building 747.
That is the best.
Oh my God. That's the best meet cute of all time.
Best.
And the effects of radiation. Feel free to email if you need random facts for an episode. I'm serious. If there's an event in time, I probably know about it. Keep on keeping on. I adore you guys. Love, Wally. P.S. I'm sorry this is not longer. There is a character limit.
Wally, I want to hug you.
We are obsessed with this email.
I've read it a million times. Okay, so normally I'm on top of emails, but I've just been laying in bed dying. This baby is killing me.
It's like you're in labor or something, Melanie. Jesus Christ.
And, oh my God. And Brianna's like, come on. Like, you have to read this. And it really just made
I'm like
my
harassing
life.
Her. And I'm like, listen. I don't care if you're in the labor and delivery room. Come here. You have to see this.
Wally is amazing. And we have to figure out a way to get him on here because I want to actually talk about his lightning strike.
Yeah. He went into that a little bit more in a follow-up email.
Yep.
I want to talk about a lot of things.
Can we get Wally to come on? Wally, I'm reaching out. Do you want to come on our podcast?
Do you have a microphone?
Yeah.
Does he need a microphone?
No, there's some cool tricks that we can do.
Okay. Well, as long as one of us knows about it, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I'll fill you in. But Wally, if you're interested, come play with us. Ooh, that sounded really creepy. Okay.
All right, old lady.
Sorry.
Wow.
Did not mean it like that.
I think you probably meant that in a horror kind
of
way.
No, I'm going to drive off with my white van with no windows. I've lost a listener.
Full of candy.
Just eat this candy by myself.
Okay, now, Wally, we may be old mothers and maybe grandmas, but we're not that kind of creepy. You want to come talk to us? You can. Anyway.
You're so creepy, too.
I'm trying to do damage control for you, and it's not working.
No, you sound creepy as well. But, cool. Wally, I sent you some stickers. Now I know where you live.
You're making it so much worse. This is not the direction we were supposed to go with this.
Oh, he gets us. He gets us. Okay. But I sent you some stickers.
But do his parents get us?
I actually made some cryptid bracket magnets, a couple magnets because they were free. And so I sent you one of those too, just because we like you.
Yeah, and I found a meme that I felt like you needed to see, so we did the old ladiest thing of all and physically printed it out.
We printed it out of me.
And put it in the snail mail.
We are grandmas. Oh my gosh.
Okay.
We don't deserve Wally. We're not cool enough.
We don't. We really don't. No. We're really not.
Okay.
We're really not. But thank you, Wally, for listening.
Yes, thank you. Tell your friends.
We love you. Yeah, well, are we just expanding our entire demographic to just 17-year-old boys in general? Is that just what we're doing now?
Yep.
We need to change all of our Facebook targeting algorithms?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Chickens and 17-year-old boys.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Jesus Christ. Okay, should we talk about cryptids?
Yes, I think we should talk about cryptids.
Have you creeped everybody out enough?
Never. Okay, so we are at our final four. So we're going to break this down to a final two in our cryptid bracket. And whew, this might put me in labor.
Okay, calm down for one more day because I'm hoping that we can record tomorrow and finish out our bracket.
So we're going to finish out our bracket. And I know I've been hyping up this Florida Man bracket. We're going to put the Florida Man bracket on hold till I come back full time.
We're going to put it in a cooler full of beer.
Yep. Florida Man cooler. Oh my gosh. That's how I'll do the basket this time. In a cooler.
Oh, I love it.
Okay. So I will get a cooler and I'll put the prizes in a cooler.
The audio guy just tagged us in some cryptids on the internet, by the way.
Oh no.
It's actually lit. It's a golden tortoise beetle. Okay.
So we're gonna hold off a little bit on the Florida bracket just till I come back full time because I don't know. I like having things a little more, what's the word? Current?
Yes.
I don't want to like pre-record a bunch of stuff. Because what if some cool Florida Man stuff happens between then?
Yeah, it will. It'll happen between now and the end of this recording.
Yeah. So continue to send in your headlines. I'm still putting that together. That bracket, though, will launch a little bit later. So you'll go a couple episodes without brackets. Sorry.
Okay. Not too long. Probably we'll go the guest stars without brackets. And then Melanie
will be back.
And Florida Man will return together.
In all victorious, our glory.
Which feels very fitting.
So cryptids. All right. Cryptids. Final four. The first matchup.
I think I'm going to break some hearts this time.
Yeah. Slide Rock versus Silky.
Slide Rock. I'm sorry, Ava.
Fuck!
I know. I really like it.
Oh my gosh. What are you doing? I really
like it. I like its balls. I like its energy. I like its bizarreness. I like its obscurity. I don't like that people steal the Selkie's clothes and make them be Selkies. That sucks.
Yeah, that's really shitty. Yeah. Stop doing that.
Yeah, I gotta go with Slide Rock.
Man.
Listen, I feel bad enough. I love Ava.
I know. And I have this big rule, I don't lie to my children, so.
Is she going to ask?
Fuck yeah, she's been asking.
Oh my God.
I have to be.
Can't you lie to her just this once?
I'm not lying to my kid. No, I can't.
Yes, you would.
Can't do it. I can maybe manipulate it a little bit and say you had some cough syrup. She didn't know what she was doing.
Listen, say whatever you need to say. Throw me under the bus. I don't care. I do feel bad, but I also love the slime wrap folder, and I have to be true to myself.
All right. I know who's going to win the next one.
Yeah, you do.
So, Dingbat versus Jersey Devil.
Dingbat. All day.
All day. All day.
Love the Dingbat. Hate the Jersey Devil. This one's easy peasy.
It's going to be bananas next week, because I really don't know who you're going to pick between Slide Rock and Dingbat.
I'm pretty sure I do.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I know who wins this.
Well, I guess you would.
I'm 90% sure.
Well,
no, I don't usually know. I don't usually know anything until we're right there. I usually surprise myself as much as anyone.
Well, you got some time to sleep on it, too.
Yeah, one night, hopefully.
One night.
It's not really that much time, but
I feel
okay.
Like this bracket went so fast. It's like kind of making me sad that it's almost over.
Well, I mean, this episode isn't even going to drop until pretty close to July.
I know. I'm still allowed to be sad.
I know, but this will come out on the 23rd.
And I've had a lot of fun putting together the basket for the winner.
What's your actual due date? Like, is it definite that there's no way around it, you'll have a baby by the 23rd, or isn't it a couple
no,
days later?
No, 29th is my C-section date.
Okay.
So, if...
If this John kid puts Mellencamp you through this not for weeks, and then you still have to have a freaking C-section, I'm gonna have to have a word with him.
Oh, man, it's ridiculous. I don't know. I'm gonna talk to her today. We might have to move this up, because I can't do this. This is torture. This is torture.
This is egregious.
I normally have full of energy, and I literally, my mother-in-law flew in from Idaho, and like I cannot like physically get out of bed most days.
She's your actual disaster relief.
She is my disaster relief. I love her, and I'm very grateful for her. I kind of won the mother-in-law lottery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
That's nice.
So we get another Titanic episode, and I'm really excited. So this will be three parts, yeah?
Yeah. I don't know if I should say I'm sorry or you're welcome.
You're welcome. Say you're welcome, because they're you kind of giving me some snippets, and they're progressively getting cooler.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. This is the most self-indulgent shit I've ever done.
Hey.
I could start a podcast about this, honestly. I could probably never stop, but I cannot leave out number three. There's so much good stuff still to go.
Listen,
and this one's better than the one before it. It has to happen.
And you're going to be holding this podcast up while I have to do my thing. So you know what? If you want to be self-indulgent, fuck it. It's our podcast, right?
It is.
But yeah, no, I love it, because I'm learning some shit.
Yeah, you're going to learn some shit this one. In this one, I learned something that I had absolutely no idea about.
Oh, damn.
Did you know the Titanic had a mascot cat?
A mascot cat?
Yeah.
No.
I didn't think you did. Are you ready to get into it?
Yep, let's do part two.
Okay. So, part two. We are going to start with a passenger account and some Carpathia-related tea for this one. Some gossip. A perspective that you may not have thought about is this. Imagine being a passenger on the Carpathia, just vibing, when boom, you have got the prime rubberneck spot in one of history's greatest disasters. And we have one detailed letter from just such a person. A 1912 seems to be a bit of a ghoul called Charles M. Hutchinson, who was on the Carpathia on his honeymoon. And honestly, paraphrasing his letter would just detract from the story, so I'm just going to let Charles tell it. First, he describes the entire sequence of events that happened on the Titanic, including people throwing snowballs at each other with shaved ice on the deck. And I mean, he wasn't there, so it's in a way that makes it pretty clear he's been getting 100% of the available tea from the survivors.
Right.
Because, I mean, it is a detailed account of what happened before the iceberg even hit. And it's like, all right, you've been talking, Charles. So he writes, "It was not a great time, however, before the Titanic began to settle, and then the passengers were eager to get in the lifeboats as they realized the deadly quality of their danger. The result was that the few remaining lifeboats were filled to overflowing, while passengers who failed to get a place jumped overboard, hoping to be picked up by the lifeboats. So great was the damage done by the collision that by 1 o'clock in the morning, the Titanic was settling rapidly. When the end came, she sank stern first, half broadside, and broke in half. Many of the rescued passengers claimed there were 2,500 passengers on board, 710 of whom were rescued by our boat. There were many thrilling rescues of persons who had jumped overboard in hopes of being picked up by the boat. One passenger who had been thrown into the water was drawn under by the suction and raised to the surface." And finally, I mean, you could just hear
you
it.
You could hear it.
Thrilling rescues. And finally rescued by one of the boats. Another gentleman on board here told me he owes his life to the fact that someone pushed him overboard as he was assisting a woman into a boat. When the lifeboats became fewer and the passengers realized their danger, panic reigned and the captain shot himself. Many of those rescued were still in evening dress, not having yet retired. As the lifeboats were in the distance, their occupants watching the ship settle in the water, a cry of help from those still on board the ill-fated ship could be heard. Those in the boats had to sit and watch others dear to them going down with the ship. The lifeboats were not intended for the Titanic, but were only temporary until the regular ones could be completed. Did you know that? I did not.
I did not.
They contained neither food nor water, and not one of them was supplied with a lantern, while all were poorly manned. Some boats were launched with but two or three men to do the rowing, and in many instances, there were women at the oars.
Oh, no!
In one boat, the plug was lost out of the bottom, and a woman stopped the hole with her hand. That the boats might follow each other and keep together, bits of paper, letters, and handkerchiefs torn into strips were burned. There seems to have been less than a third enough lifeboats on the Titanic to take care of the passengers in case of accident.
Oh, he would have shit his pants if he found out about the lingerie stopping holes.
That's what I was thinking! Our ship, when she received the wireless, at once turned north, the location given by the wireless. You can tell he thinks he's hot shit to be on the rescue ship. And we covered some 60 miles before we met the first lifeboats of the Titanic. The giant boat, the most wonderful afloat, was nowhere to be seen on the surface of the wide sea. By this time, we were entirely surrounded by an enormous field of ice and icebergs. At one time, I counted 25 of them. It was wonderful how our captain, A.H. Rostron, steered the ship in and out amongst them. The ice field has been estimated by many on board the Carpathia, I bet it has, you bunch of gossips, at being 25 miles in extent, with icebergs standing up in them as high as 100 feet. Then there were countless floating icebergs, which practically surrounded the ship. I have some 8 or 10 pictures I took of these icebergs. After the wireless had been received as to the danger of the Titanic, everything on board the Carpathia was made ready to receive the boats with the passengers of the lost ship. The first lifeboat from the Titanic was sighted, and its passengers were taken on board at 4 o'clock Monday morning, April 15. The last boatload was taken on board at 7 a.m. The last two boats each contained one dead sailor, dead from cold and exposure. Two others died in the day. All were buried at sea after services held at 3 o'clock by Father Anderson of Baltimore, an Episcopal monk. The iron doors at the side of our boat were opened and a platform let down. The bodies, after being sewed up in sailcloth and weighted at the feet to make them strike the water feet first, were laid on slabs or boards and covered with a British flag. After a prayer, the flag was lifted and the bodies were pushed off the slabs feet first, making as little splash as possible. One, however, struck flat, and I shall never forget the sound of the splash. Our crew worked heroically taking the rescued onto our boat, and there wasn't the least sign of confusion. The iron doors at the side of our ship were opened and rope ladders let down. The women were drawn up on a swing, the men who were able climbed the rope ladder, and the children and babies were hauled up after being placed in a canvas sack. About 12 of the lifeboats of the Titanic were raised to the deck of our ship. The balance with the life rafts were set adrift. Our ship, after cruising around in hope of picking up more lifeboats, returned to the location where the Titanic had gone down, and at the request of our captain, Father Anderson read the prayer of interment, the benediction of interment, the prayer of consolation, and the prayer of thanksgiving for those who were saved. Our captain then decided to return to New York. All the rescued remained as comfortable as possible and everything done for them in the way of clothing. We gave up our cabin to Mrs. Smith, daughter of Congressman Hughes of West Virginia, who lost her husband, he being one of the men left on board the Titanic. We doubled up in the cabin of Mr. and Mrs. Idles of St. Louis, Missouri, at noon Monday. Our ship turned and put back for New York, which we hope to reach sometime Thursday night or Friday morning. The fog has been heavy and we are delayed. After we had picked up all the lifeboats from the Titanic, we sighted the California and a freight steamer. She was signaled to remain in case there might possibly be more lifeboats adrift. Later, we sighted the Burma, another freight steamer. The iceberg which the Titanic struck was enormous in size and reached the upper deck of the ship, which was about 70 feet above the waterline. So, I mean, I think that the most... never really thought about that part was the bodies that they would have to dispose of after they were already on board the Carpathia.
Yeah.
Like, obviously they didn't all keep surviving.
Right. Yeah. It's not, just your, it's all,
Yeah.
And then the one coffin slamming down, it was probably
it
like
a, it wasn't even a coffin. It was just a guy.
I know. It was probably like a belly flop. I mean,
yeah,
there's no other nice way to put that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that was a kind of a wall of text, but I just thought that was interesting. And then the more I was like, let me trim it down, the more I was like, no, this guy did the Lord's work getting the Titanic gossip. It needs to be, this needs to be shared 100+ years later.
That's like the old timey cell phone footage.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So now we're going to jump to 1997 in the movie, and we're going to talk briefly about Cal. What are your thoughts about Cal?
Fuck Cal.
Okay.
I think, well, I don't know if it's like the greasy skin or the hair.
Greasy skin? I thought he was dewy. I mean, he's a douche, but a dewy douche.
No, he was not dewy. He was greasy.
Oh my goodness, I never really looked at it that way. I'm going to have to take another look at Cal. I mean, I think he's a hottie.
Blech.
A douche. What? Really?
Really?
I mean, do you think Jack's a hottie?
No.
Okay, who's the hottie? Who's the hottie on the Titanic? Male, female, I don't care. Who's the hottie?
Well, obviously it's Rose.
Okay, well, who is the male hottie?
Let's see. It's the modern day submarine dude.
Oh yeah, he is though.
He's Bank Bank for me. He was hot.
Oh, yeah, the one with like kind of the shaggy hair and the the one from Twister.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No. Okay. He. Yeah. Super hottie. Apparently, it turns out there's some like thing where a lot of people are actually really sympathetic to Cal.
Was he in Twister? My brain is breaking right now.
Yeah, did you not know that?
Will
Paxton.
Okay, I'm like having a hard time. Like, yeah, he was.
Of course he was.
My brain's sorry. Don't my I? I don't trust my brain right now.
It's okay. You don't need to.
But yeah, the submarine guy. Woo.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm completely and totally with you on that. It
and he's so nice to old ladies. God. Ooh, that's so hot.
I know. And those eyes and that tan. Yeah. Okay. So.
No, Cal. Okay. Now I'm looking at Cal. Let's talk about Cal and his greasy skin.
I mean, we're about to talk about Cal quite a lot, but now.
Some toner.
Now I'm going to look him up and evaluate his greasiness.
No. He's greasy. I don't like his forehead.
Wow.
No, I don't. I need to remember this is an actual person,
okay,
so
be,
I'm sorry.
He might be a little bit greasy.
Oh, he...
I don't know. He's got beautiful eyes, though. Everyone thinks he wears eyeliner, but he says he doesn't. But speaking of things that he says...
Okay, here we go.
Speaking of things that he says... I was about to say, it turns out that there's this whole thing where young women think that Jack is just the shit, and then you get older and you watch it again and you realize that actually Cal was not as bad as he was cracked up to be, and it's like this whole, you know, debate, controversy phenomenon that happens. Now that I think about it, I think that the main place I read that was an interview with Billy Zane. I'm not sure that's really a thing. I was actually about to cite that like it was real, but now that I think about it, I'm not so confident.
Right.
Billy Zane wants you to think it is, though.
Of course he does.
I make no comments other than that. In the movie, what was supposed to happen was that the ship is sinking, it's time for Rose to board a lifeboat. Molly Brown and her mom are already, Rose's mom, not Molly Brown's mom, are already in one, waving her in, and then Cal smugly tells her that he should have kept her new drawing because it'll be worth a lot more by morning, which, wow, 1912 revenge porn, holy shit.
Oh, yeah, fuck that.
Yeah, right? So she stares at him, she's finally really seeing him for what he is, and then he turns to walk away, like, pulling her behind him. And then she hesitates outside the boat. Everyone's starting to get panicky, impatient that she won't get in. She says goodbye, mother, and turns and storms away. Cal grabs her really roughly by the arm, spins her around, and says, where are you going? To him? To be a whore to a gutter rat? And she tells him, I'd rather be his whore than your wife. Tries to leave. He grabs her, kind of roughs her up, and she pulls out a hairpin, jabs him with it, and then leaves. But it was Kate Winslet's idea to nix the hairpin and spit on him instead. That was not part of the script, which is a nice callback to Jack telling her to spit like a man.
Yes.
Yeah, and kind of cool considering that entire scene was also improv, and this was also completely off script. And in the spit like a man scene, the spit was made out of egg whites.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. In the whore to a gutter rat scene, it started out as her actual spit and ended up being petroleum jelly when she ran out of spit because they had to do multiple takes. And so James Cameron.
Some Vaseline. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, yep. What else could you make spit out of?
I mean, I don't know. I'm sure we could try some experiments.
You could do a spit James bracket.
Oh god. I'll do a mini bracket with all the guest stars. We'll leave the spit bracket for them. What will you put in that gift bag? So it ended up being James Cameron was super into the idea, and in true James Cameron form, he wanted authenticity. So he didn't tell Billy Zane it was gonna happen.
Really?
Of course.
What a dick.
What else would you expect from freaking James Cameron? But then there ended up being a lot of retakes, so I don't think that we ended up actually seeing the authentic reaction, unfortunately. Because when you look at it, he doesn't actually seem that shocked at all. And speaking of Cal, another little sidebar in him, lightning round style, the sinking scenes were all done in a tank of 54-degree water, and there were hot tubs all over the set to hop in and out of to stay warm. And Billy Zane said, it became so commonplace to just keep getting in and out of hot tubs in a tux. Then someone walks by and you just reach into a basket and you're noshing on a hot dog in a tux in a hot tub. Just deadpan without any reaction. Like, this is completely normal.
I want to sit in a hot tub and eat a hot dog.
In a tuxedo?
Yeah. I look good in a tuxedo.
That'd be hot. So when he and Rose were arguing in their room over breakfast the morning after the third class dance party with her in the white dress and he flips the table,
uh-huh.
It took 7 takes and she only had 2 of that dress. So he had to flip it extremely carefully to avoid getting any food or drink on it during the takes. Because if you look, it's covered in like little fancy cups of actual orange juice and actual food and everything. And he had to flip it over 7 times and not get any food on her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so if you look, he flips it, like, actually completely away from her. You don't really notice that. And Billy Zane, who you may know is now bald, wore at least a partial wig in Titanic.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. It is very hard to verify that fact. I spent such an inordinate amount of time trying to confirm whether Billy Zane wore a wig in Titanic. I'm pretty confident in saying that I'm pretty sure he did wear at least a partial wig, but it is hard to be sure. And there's a similar controversy about the eyeliner, but he said on Twitter in like, I don't know, maybe like 2016, he said he did not wear eyeliner, it's just his Spartan jeans.
Ew.
And he is convinced that there's a major pro-Cal lobby. And I don't know. I did find a couple of like listicles. It was like 5 reasons you may have gotten it all wrong about Cal. But I kind of wonder if Billy Zane wrote those.
Yeah, he wrote it.
Yeah, because it's like two articles and they have pretty much the exact same points. And I'm like, we see you.
I don't get it. I don't get it. Sorry.
I'm not sure anyone but Billy Zane himself does, actually. It seems like it's been 24 years and he may still be a little bit sad about being the bad guy.
Oh, Lee. He was a great bad guy, though.
He was. He was. And I mean, I will die on the hill that he was a hottie. Maybe a greasy hottie. Definitely not the biggest hottie in the movie, but a hottie.
All right. If you say so. Yeah. I like slip and slides, confident. But just not on my men.
Damn! I do feel pretty confident I'm not the only one who thinks this.
All right. Should we take a poll?
I do think Billy Zane... Yeah, we should. I do think Billy Zane is probably the only one who thinks there are people who actually think he was a good guy now that they're older. Here is something that you may not know. You know who almost played Rose?
Who?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, I could do without that, too.
Yep. You know who else almost played Rose? Nicole Kidman, Jodie Foster, Cameron Diaz, Sharon Stone, and Madonna, who was 39 at the time.
The Cameron Diaz, I did know that. The Madonna, that's interesting.
Rose was supposed to be 17.
Interesting.
I don't like Madonna at all. This is probably one of my more controversial takes, but I really, really don't like Madonna. Wait,
huge Madonna fan growing up. Huge.
Really?
I had my roller skates with my little lace gloves and, you know, going around the park singing Lucky Star, like huge, but oh my gosh, she has gone off the rails. Why?
Yeah. Kate Winslet really, really, really wanted the role. She was not really famous. She'd only done one or two movies and they were a little bit more indie. She was super young. I think she was like 19 or 20. And I mean, there were some huge names in this movie, and she was super nervous about it, and he was super nervous about casting a relatively unknown, super young girl to carry this massive, massive, massive movie. But he did her audition, screen test, whatever, and then apparently she sent him roses and said, "I'm your rose."
Oh my gosh. No one else could have done that like her.
No, absolutely not.
She's fantastic. No. I love her. She is fantastic.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad it wasn't Madonna. Imagine that alternate movie. What the hell?
Yeah.
She was 39! I don't know why I'm so offended by this.
Which is crazy to think about because of the ageism is so bad in Hollywood that she would be considered for that.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, I hear that point, but it's not even ageism when you're a 39-year-old trying to play a 17-year-old.
Yeah. Okay. How old is she now?
24 years older than 39. Hold on, I'll find out. She's old as heck. How old is Madonna?
She looks good, though.
She's 62.
She looks fucking good for 62.
She bothers me. Anyway, I'm going to lose a couple listeners today. Hopefully not Wally. That's all that matters. So, Miss Anne Elizabeth Isham was a 50-year-old first-class woman from Chicago. So she would have been fine for Madonna to play, possibly. Her dad had owned a law firm with Abraham Lincoln's son.
Oh.
She had been living in Paris with her sister for about a decade when she was set to sail back to America on the Titanic. She had her Great Dane on board with her. Pretty sure it was Great Dane. No one knows, like, for sure, but generally everything refers to it as Great Dane. Usually, for the most part, first-class women made out pretty well. Out of 144 first-class women, only four died. But Anne was one of them because she wouldn't leave her dog. and they couldn't get a Great Dane.
My gosh.
Yeah. And there was a passenger in the water found with her arms frozen around a large dog, and that woman was believed to have been Anne.
Oh, bless it.
Yeah. And that's worse because it's not like, well, maybe the dog was, you know, in the kennel or in her room or whatever, and she wouldn't get in the boat until she went back and got him. Like, that had to have been her on the deck, and they were like, no, you're not getting in. And she was like, well, fuck it.
I didn't think about doggies.
Okay, well, let's think about it some more, because that's what's coming next.
No!
Yep. There were known to have been 12 dogs on board.
What?
There was a kennel on the F deck where they could be kept, which was run by the ship's carpenter, but some of them were kept in cabins with first class owners. It wasn't technically allowed, so they were either sneaking or the crew was looking the other way. No one really knows.
Oh, dogs were not allowed at all?
No, they were allowed on the ship, but they weren't allowed to stay in people's rooms.
Oh,
but okay. People did. Sorry, it anyway. I missed that. Yeah, no, you're fine. There was at least one American painter who knew and did not approve. He wrote a letter that said, "There are a number of obnoxious American women, the scourge of any place they infest, and worse on shipboard than anywhere. Many of them carry tiny dogs and lead husbands around like pet lambs."
Oh, things have not changed at all.
Nope, not at all. Not a bit.
Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah. I have a question. You're a dog lover. I'm a dog lover.
I mean, sort of.
Would you?
Only specific. That's like saying I'm a people lover just because I have a friend.
Well, you love your dogs.
I love my dog.
You love your dog. Okay.
Yes.
We'll be more specific. Okay. You're on the Titanic. Are you sneaking your dog in your room?
Oh, 100%. But it depends on the dog. Like, if it was objectively a shitty dog, probably not. But my dog is objectively a very good dog.
Right.
So probably. Would you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know how sneaky could be because he's humongous.
Yeah, mine's 90 pounds.
Yeah, mine's like over 100. And he blows out his fur like nonstop. I don't even get seasons. It's just the whole year. So he would leave like a little Hansel and Gretel trail of white puffballs everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that is the one thing that would happen. Mine's a shedder too. She's a 90-pound German Shepherd, and it is pretty much year-round. A little worse in the spring, but definitely year-round.
Yeah.
So yes, I would put my Lorna in there, and I don't know if I would get off the ship without her or not.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if it meant like leaving my kids and dying, I would have to. But if it was just me and my dog and I didn't have kids.
Yeah.
No. The dog people on board fully did not give a shit about this disapproval. And they were planning a dog show for the 15th. Which, obviously, there was no 15th on the Titanic, right. But there was going to be a dog show that day. So, the dogs on board included a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel and an elderly Airedale owned by the same person who was a first-class businessman who survived. A Chow Chow named Chow Chow, owned by a first-class stockbroker who survived. I mean, the owner, not the dog, for both of those.
How original.
I know. A Champion Frenchie owned by a first-class banker who survived, but the dog didn't. An Airedale named Kitty, owned by John Jacob Astor, who is, we probably all know, a first-class banker who did not survive. Mm-hmm. A Pomeranian named Bebe, who was owned by a first-class woman who survived. And Bebe survived with her in a lifeboat.
Yay, Bebe!
I know. And that, she's a Pomeranian, and that is why, that's a callback in the movie. That's why Old Rose has a Pomeranian that she takes with her on the boat.
Oh! Mm-hmm. It was Bebe?
I mean, it wasn't Bebe, but it was a reference to the Pomeranians on board. So Bebe survived. There was another Pomeranian owned by a first-class woman who also survived. That dog also survived with her like the other one when she refused to leave the lifeboat to get onto the Carpathia unless they'd let her dog on too, which they initially did not want to do.
Are you fucking serious?
Yep, but she was in the lifeboat and she was like, well, I guess fuck off then because I'm not getting out of this lifeboat. So they let them both on and the dog survived. But then it may have been run over by a carriage when they docked in New York City.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
It even happens to dogs. They survive this great tragedy only to be taken out by the dumbest stuff.
Yeah, which I guess maybe this isn't a good segue because it's not dumb stuff. But when I am researching the life stories of various survivors, like you remember last week, the ones who were in a Nazi camp and maybe they were Nazis, maybe they weren't. And all
there's
this.
No such when thing as fake Nazis.
Okay, well, I mean, you're probably right. But when I get into these survivors' life stories long after the Titanic, the number of suicides is fucking devastating.
Oh, yeah. The PTSD, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Nowhere really says why, but, like, so many of these people or their kids end up dying by suicide. It's unreal.
I never considered that.
I hadn't either. And I mean, when I get into these people, I always go down these rabbit holes and I want to tell their entire life story. And I'm like, okay, this is super not relevant. I need to cut this. But a lot of times their life story is that's where it ends. Like a lot. Which sucks. So a Pekingese named Sun Yat-sen, owned by a first-class man who survived, and the dog also survived with his family in Lifeboat 3. There was a small dog named Frau Frau, owned by a first-class woman who survived, although Frau Frau did not. Uh-huh. And the woman wrote after the sinking, "The loss of my little dog hurt me very much. I will never forget how he dragged on my clothes. He so wanted to accompany me." She had been forced to leave him behind in her cabin, and he pulled on her clothes until they ripped when she left.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Ugh. There was also possibly a Newfie named Rigel who may or may not have rescued a bunch of people, but that story is extremely questionable.
Right.
I'm 90% sure it's not true, but it does come up a lot. And possibly a fox terrier and a toy poodle. Captain Smith's dog, a gorgeous borzoi named Ben, spent a night on the Titanic before it docked and then went back home with his daughter Helen before it actually set sail. But he was there the night before, and he had his beautiful dog, Ben, with him.
Oh.
Yeah, thank goodness it went home. I don't know if maybe he was trying it out to see how it would do, and then was like, no, this dog's not
right
for the ship life, and sent it home to Helen, or if it was just chilling with him that night. I have no idea. One of my absolute favorite details of this entire episode, if not this entire podcast, was that Titanic had, technically, an official ship cat.
I'm so ready for this.
Jenny.
Oh, Jenny from the dock.
Jenny from the dock. This is why I miss you so much. Oh my god. A ship cat named Jenny who would have lived on the ship full time and I believe did live on it for a while because, I mean, there was obviously a period of time where the crew was there getting everything fired up. We know Captain Smith spent the night in it before. And when she had previously been on another ship. Let me see if I wrote down.
Probably so much mice for Jenny.
Yes. She, according to Wikipedia, she was there as a mascot and also to keep down the ship's population of rats and mice. She had just had a litter of kittens on another ship and then been moved to the Titanic to be their ship cat. And while she was there, she kept close to her favorite crew member, Jim. She lived in the galley and she ate kitchen scraps.
Aww.
And yeah. Well, but hold on. Supposedly, just before the ship set sail, Jim saw Jenny carrying her kittens off the ship, one by one, like by the scruff, took it as a bad omen, and followed her.
You're fucking kidding me. Nope, you gotta watch these animals. They know they're smart. Uh-huh.
So Jim peaced out. Yep. So Jenny did not go down with the ship, but there was technically a ship cat named Jenny.
Aww.
Also, sailing on board the Titanic, 30-plus roosters, several hens.
That's a lot of cock.
Oh, God, you just can't help yourself, can you?
I'm sorry.
And you know I have a reference to some sexy stuff later in this episode that I was not sure about whether to include. And I guess you're just, once again, breaking the ice. 30 plus roosters, several hens, and a yellow canary who had a ticket that cost $7 in today's money.
They charged the canary?
And during the sinking, someone released the dogs from their kennels and they got zoomies on the tilting deck.
Oof.
Titanic zoomies.
Titanic.
Disaster zoomies.
No.
Yep. Yep. So that is some info about the 12 dogs and various cocks of the Titanic. Now, do you remember the scene, I know you do, where the Irish mother is tucking in her two young children as the ship is definitely sinking?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, that one, that's a rough one. Yeah, I think we've mentioned that in this podcast on...
Have we really?
I think we mentioned it because I think we were talking about Addles and your foster daughter.
Oh,
sleeping.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, and she tells them, and so they lived happily together for 300 years in the land of Tir na n'Og, the land of eternal youth and beauty. That is an actual Celtic myth. The Tir na n'Og is an underworld. According to Wikipedia, it says they reach it by entering ancient burial grounds or caves, by journeying through a mist, by going underwater, or by traveling across the sea for 3 days on an enchanted boat or horse. And the actress playing the mom wasn't Irish, but some of the other cast and crew were, and the line was suggested by them and improvised.
Wow.
Yeah, they said it would just be very logical for her to use that to help them feel better about the fact that they're about to go underwater.
That is
beautiful. And to think that something better is coming. Yeah, I mean, that has always been such a devastating moment, but wow, that hits different as a parent.
Yeah, it does. Wow.
Yeah, I watched that scene when I was writing up the stuff about Wally the Violinist last episode, and then just started crying instantly, that, like pushing a button.
That's like one of the hardest scenes, like in any really movie, period.
Yeah. I mean...
It was hard watching, not as a parent.
Yeah. I don't think I had actually watched that scene as a parent before. And, I mean, you know how I feel about crying.
Yeah.
But I watched that, and, I mean, it was just like turning the faucet on.
Yeah.
It was instantaneous. Okay. So, the next part is kind of a big part. It's the last part, but it's a little crazy. I'm always a little bit bewildered by conspiracy theories about works of fiction because it's like, you can interpret it however you want. Nothing's real or not real, really. So is the big gotcha that you figured out, like, the writer or director's secret intentions when they made it?
Right.
Or, because, I mean, you can't be like, oh my god, I uncovered the truth. There is no truth. It's fiction. I don't know. It's always a little bit unsatisfying.
I love conspiracy theories.
Okay. Well, you may love these. These two did kind of make me go, oh, shit. So why not? We're going to save my favorite for last. Mm. Conspiracy number one, Jack isn't real.
What?
According to this interpretation, he was a figment of Rose's imagination. And the evidence for this is as follows. One, where do they meet for the first time? With Rose hanging off the back of the ship about to jump. He's a creation of her brain, trying to give her some kind of hope to hang on to and get her back over the edge. She may even be experiencing some kind of stress-induced psychosis. She manifests someone who's everything that Cal isn't.
Oh, I like
it. Two. Yeah, two. Not all, but a lot of their interactions are alone. In the car, on the deck in the spitting scene, while he draws her, the flying scene, running through the corridors and through the boiler room, when he presses her to acknowledge her unhappiness in the gymnasium. His advice to her could easily come from her own subconscious. He tells her to break free to stay alive, and that sooner or later the fire in her will go out.
Huh.
After the iceberg, she needed Jack to have the strength to fight and a reason to separate from her first-class traveling companions and the future that would assign her, despite the incredible amount of danger that it put her in.
That's why he wasn't on there with her.
Uh-huh. So she was a first-class woman. She could have just stayed with them, but then when she got onto the Carpathia, back to New York City, I mean, she would have been disembarking with them. And she would have been kind of on this assembly line where she can't just be like, you know what, I'm good. But if she kind of manifested this third class guy that she had to stick with and would give her a reason to separate from them, you know?
Right.
So 4, he didn't get on the damn door because he didn't exist. He was just in some capacity there with her during the long hours that she would have been delirious with hypothermia. And she was finally able to let go once rescue was near. Because, I mean, if you remember, that's when she decides to go ahead and drop him down. When she sees somebody rowing and she grabs the whistle. It is also very questionable whether his frozen body would have actually sunk when she let him go. If you remember, a lot of the bodies in the water were floating without life jackets even after they died.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he may have possibly sunk, but it's iffy. There's a case to be made that that's weird. But as soon as she lets go of his hands, he sinks right down, which is possibly weird. 5, at the end, and I was kind of not with this one until we got to 5. 5, at the end, Bodine tells Old Rose that there was never any record of him found. Now, you may think, sure, because he won tickets 7 minutes before it set sail.
Right.
But first of all, did Rose know that?
I don't think so.
Because he says at dinner that he won his tickets in the lucky hand of poker, but he never says when that happened. It could have been weeks ago.
Oh, shit.
Second of all, Rose doesn't say, damn, that's crazy. She says, no, there wouldn't be wood there. I don't know, man. I was kind of...
That's really compelling.
Yeah, I was kind of like, yeah, that's interesting, but no, until that line, and then I was like, huh.
That is so weird.
Yeah. So, conspiracy theory number 2. This one is real juicy. Okay. So, conspiracy theory number 2. Jack is a transgender man. And I won't lie, this is kind of canon in my head, and you're probably like, what the fuck, but bear with me, okay? I am going to pull a lot, or possibly a lesbian passing as a man. I am going to quote cracked.com on this one a shit ton, like all throughout this. I'm pretty much pulling. They do a listicle about this, and this is pretty much just a retelling of that listicle. So thank you, cracked.com. So here we go. I'm going to quote them directly for the beginning. It says, this is a distant memory for Leo, grizzled revenant frontiersman DiCaprio, but there's a word the late 90s press kept using to describe him. The New York Times referenced his, quote, androgynous good looks. Entertainment Weekly said, the shockingly androgynous DiCaprio looks barely old enough to be playing anyone with hormones. The BBC quotes someone saying that Leo, quote, didn't like being so slim and childlike, almost androgynous. In fact, Buzzsprout's LGBT editor takes it one step further than I dare, saying Leonardo DiCaprio and other androgynous 90s heartthrobs looked a lot like the soft butch queer women we'd grow up to date in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's unpack. The correct article that I got all this from says James Cameron had never cast anyone like this before, and he never would again. He was absolutely lacking facial hair, and such a stickler for authenticity had to know that the facilities for shaving in third class would have been very limited. Look at every other third class mansion.
Uh-huh.
Literally everyone. For that matter, every other man shown. Like, you can even see 5 o'clock shadow on Cal.
Uh-huh.
2, he never gets a shirtless scene, which was very abnormal. Even male extras were seen shirtless. He was regularly seen in loose or layered shirts. Leonardo DiCaprio had done shirtless or nude scenes in other movies, and Rose had a nearly full frontal nude scene, so it's clearly not something the film was afraid of. In the car scene, he's fully clothed, jacket and all, when she pulls him into the back seat, and then when they cut to them after the fact, he's shirtless, but he's pressed against her, so you see absolutely nothing but his shoulder, like nothing.
Right.
Yeah. 3. Hit skip a few times, Aunt Veda and Aunt Carolyn. First of all, Rose specifically uses the language, put your hands on me, which is very specific. Second of all, it seems pretty clear that she finished too when they come back, and I'll just leave that there. The cracked article also says, the sex scene lacks any thrusting or other typical Hollywood shorthand, Cameron films included, for this is heterosexual intercourse.
Yep.
4. Again, according to the Cracked article. A third of the way into the movie, Jack is invited to dine with the first class. And adopting this new look and manner requires additional prep. You're about to go into the snake pit, warns Kathy Bates' character, in parentheses, as in the penis domain, and she offers assistance. The next time we see them, she's finishing putting the knight's wardrobe on Jack, and wow, that was a convenient cut. We appear to have skipped over a 45-year-old married woman taking a 20-year-old third-class boy toy to her cabin, then dressing him up for her amusement. That could be highly improper, or at least extremely awkward, unless you look at it as a woman who figured out Jack's situation, sympathized, and wanted to help.
Oh, shit!
At dinner, one of the guests tells him he could almost pass for a gentleman. Which you could read that two different ways.
Right, right.
5. Jack grew up in Wisconsin and then peaced out to go spend his time in California and Paris.
Uh-huh.
6. I'm trying not to just read you the Cracked article verbatim, but it's so good. I don't care. Have to do it again. It says, when Rose goes through Jack's sketches without permission, she finds a bunch of naked women there. She responds, well, 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 and then digs through for more and smiles when Jack says lots of girls willing to take their clothes off. That's not the usual reaction when opening a guy's folder and seeing unexpected nudes, at least not if you're as uptight as Rose is shown to be earlier in this scene. No, it's coyly hinted that Rose likes what she sees, though she has to close the portfolio when passersby almost spot what she's admiring. And these aren't the only nudes Rose likes. She owns a nude Picasso painting. James Cameron didn't have the rights to reproduce that painting from Picasso's Rose period, and so he had to pay a fine. But it seems like it was important for him to show that his heroine liked looking at nude women.
Oh, really? Nude. He paid a fine on that?
Yep. Nude prostitutes, in fact. Lesbian prostitutes, according to interpretation. She seems to have other opinions that could be interpreted as being a little bit underwhelmed by cisgender male anatomy, like telling someone that Freud's ideas about the male preoccupation with size might be of particular interest to you.
I remember that.
Jack promises to teach her to spit, chew tobacco, and ride a horse like a man, and it seems to me almost like he's aware that those are specific male skills that can be acquired. The pictures from her at the end of the movie show her in mostly male-dominated hobbies. 7. Jack doesn't like to be called Mr. Dawson by Rose, just Jack, which could also be short for Jacqueline.
Oh.
7. Cracked article again. Rose says, echoing the audience's thoughts about her suicide attempt, I know what you must be thinking. Poor little rich girl, what does she know about misery? Jack replies, that's not what I was thinking. What I was thinking was what could have happened to hurt this girl so much she thought she had no way out. This telegraphs that we'll learn more about Rose's backstory, but we never do. She just tells Jack that she's rich and unhappily engaged, which we already heard. We have to read between the lines to see she's trapped in a different and worse way. In that same conversation, Jack asks of Rose's fiancé, do you love him? Rose reacts like it's an odd question, and it is taken at face value, because she literally just told Jack that she chose suicide to escape Cal. Asked again, she says, you don't know me, and I don't know you, and we are not having this conversation at all. You are rude and uncouth and presumptuous. Even though she has already openly confided in Jack the question's direct answer. She's flustered because she sees there's more to this question. Jack's asking her whether she likes guys at all, and that's taking her into dangerous territory. 9, and last but not least, at the end, she says, a woman's heart is a deep ocean of secrets. Even though, theoretically, her secrets are out at that point. But that one wouldn't be.
Ooh! I really love this theory!
Right? And if you watch it again, it
with
might
a different
blow your mind.
Lens. Yes. Yeah. Wow!
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a conspiracy theory, like, that I dig this one hard. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that the first one was really interesting, especially in terms of the, there wouldn't be, would there? But, I mean, there's a lot of plot holes in that one.
Right.
Like, he clearly has interactions with other people. Now, Rose is the narrator. She could just be an unreliable narrator. It is theoretically all through her perspective. So, I mean, I guess, but that, it's a reach in a lot of different places. I don't know if the second one really is.
Right. No, I love it. I love it.
Yeah. I really want to watch the whole movie again and try to, like, really watch it through that lens and see if there are actually any plot holes. I've watched a lot of pieces of it, and I've thought it through a lot, and I can't actually think of any, but I want to watch the whole thing again.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, that's part two.
Oh, I love it. So, what we need to do is, once we get through part three, I really want to, like, sit down and, like, watch this together.
Oh, my God. I would die to watch it together.
We need to watch it together.
We should put the... Can we record that and put it in Patreon?
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. We don't really need to wait long for that. You can do that with a baby.
Yes. On you. Yes, we can do that, like, straight away. Oh, baby's first movie.
Yes, you can take a break from breastfeeding and crying.
Yes.
And
so let's do that, because I think that's really easy to do. So let's plan. Baby comes out, me breastfeeding, crying, and we will watch this together with a different lens.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I could not be more enthused about that.
Oh, I love it.
You want to do some disaster relief?
Yeah, what you got?
Okay, so I've got a couple things. We went to Holiday World this week. Shout out to the COVID vaccine.
Yay! I'm so happy. Your vacation got me through a lot of contractions.
Yeah, you got live minute-by-minute coverage. Ugh. The weather sucked, but we still had fun. I think I've probably talked about this before. Actually, I think I may have talked about this last episode, that I have rheumatoid arthritis. And the last time we went, because we had to skip last year, you know why?
COVID.
But yeah, so the last time before that would have been 2019. And I was about a year or two into having symptoms at that point, and I was in agony. I know now that my toes will swell up a lot. My toes and my knuckles have a lot of issues, and if I just do too much walking, just too much shit to my feet, it's not good. They will get really swollen, excruciatingly painful, not a good time. So, Holiday World, you probably don't know this, is super duper hilly. When you go in, not all the time, but a lot of the time you're going downhill, straight to the fun. But when you come out, nope. Up extremely steep hills, usually pulling wagons full of children. And it's rough. It's really rough. Last time I was in absolute complete agony after like half an hour, like nothing. And I was very nervous because, I mean, it has progressed a bit in the past 2 years, and I was worried that it was just not going to be a good time at all at this point. I mean, honestly, I was worried that I may not be that far from needing some kind of accessibility aid to do this, which I don't want to say something problematic, but I am at that stage where I'm not there yet, and I have not accepted it yet, and I'm just not ready.
Right.
I don't want to say that in such a way that... God, I don't want to say that in such a way that would shame anyone who does need accessibility devices, because it will be me one day, I'm sure, but I don't want it to be me quite yet.
Right, no.
So, I tried some different shoes, and they are Crocs.
Oh my God, that's so crazy. I've been wanting some Crocs. I've been, like, denying it for so long. You bought Crocs?
Yeah.
You bought Crocs.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. They're not even on-brand Crocs, they're Walmart Crocs. I tried on some on-brand Crocs, and then I tried on the Walmart ones for $10, and they felt exactly the same, and I was like, well, I mean, why pay $60?
Right.
So, I've never worn Crocs in my life. I've never wanted to wear Crocs in my life. I am horrified by how they look. But I got those, and then I also, at the last minute, got this thing called TheraWorks Relief for Joint Discomfort and Inflammation Foam. And it's a topical NSAID, and you put it on your joints. And my knuckles were a little bit stiff and sore on the way there. I hadn't really done anything. It's just on their bullshit. And I rubbed it on my knuckles in the car, and in like 2 minutes, no pain, none.
Oh, that's gone. So awesome.
Yeah. And you're supposed to reapply it every 3 hours. So I wore Crocs, and I put this stuff on all my joints every 3 hours. And I did not have a bit of pain until, like, 7 hours in.
Oh, I'm so happy for you.
And at that point, like, it was raining and we were trying to get things in as fast as we could. So I wasn't being as good about it as I should be. So I kind of screwed myself in the last couple hours. Right, right. But this stuff is legit. It's a little expensive. It's like 7 ounces and it's $20, but I mean, I would pay $100. It was worth every penny.
Oh, I'm so happy for you.
And the shoes were like a massage. Oh my God, I'm wearing them right now.
Yeah, we bought Abby Crocs. Well, I took her shoe shopping. She needed some new shoes a couple months ago, and she picked up some Crocs. They're really loud. They're tie-dye. And I was just like, you know, I get the eye twitching thing. But she's my little old lady. And
oh, I'm glad it's not just me. I feel like a dude.
No, and she wanted the Crocs, and I bought her the little whatever those little button things are for. And this kid just wears her Crocs all the time. And I'm like, well, and we're a barefoot family. So she's wearing her Crocs all the time. Then she's like just as comfortable, if not more. And I'm like, ah.
That's what I was about to say. That they are more comfortable than being barefoot.
I think I'm going to pull the trigger. Oh, I don't want to, but I think I'm going to.
I know. I'm so sympathetic to that. If you knew me in person, you would know how absolutely insane it is that I'm in my own home where I could be barefoot recording wearing shoes.
Yeah.
It does not happen.
It blows my mind.
I have jogged barefoot.
Have you been to their website? They've got like Mary Janes. They've got sandals. They've got sandals that look so 90s that just make my heart explode.
I am eyeballing some flats that are Crocs that look like they're relatively Crocs material. And I don't know how they actually look in person. I also don't know how much they feel like regular Crocs, but I mean, you know that I have an aesthetic I like to wear, very 50s dresses. If I could never wear pants again for the rest of my life, I would absolutely do that. It kills me in the winter when I finally have to transition to pants. I wait until it's like snowing. I mean, I will not put pants on just because it's cold ever when it's snowing and I don't mean a little snow, I mean a foot of snow. So the fact that I'm in my house wearing Crocs right now is unreal, but they're actually more comfortable than being barefoot.
I think I'm gonna do it.
You have to. You're about to have a baby. You deserve some Crocs.
I deserve Crocs.
You do.
Okay.
And if you're not sure, I mean, honestly, try out the Walmart ones first.
Yeah.
Because they're $10, and that's the ones I'm wearing right now. I tried the Crocs on, and they felt so similar that I feel confident going ahead and trying to see if I can find some passably cute ones.
If I buy Crocs, though, I am buying the fucking buttons. I'm going all in.
Oh, you should. Of course you are.
I wonder if they have disaster ones. Like cute little Titanic buttons for your shoes.
I don't
know.
I haven't really investigated it yet. We found out a couple weeks ago that Adelaide has extremely flat feet. So now we've got to go on a shoe journey for her, too. But apparently Crocs aren't really ideal for that, unfortunately. Mm. So what do you have?
So I'm going to bring it back to my mother-in-law again. So she thought I was having this baby. So she switched her flight up, took a red eye from Idaho. Well, she drove from Idaho to Salt Lake. And then took a red eye. It's bananas. Anyways, she's here. Yeah. We're in Louisiana. It's really fucking hot. Where the mosquitoes are just out enjoying their buffet right now. So,
buffet, I love you.
She bought us, it's called Thermacell, and it's like a rechargeable like mosquito repellent thing.
Really?
And it has been so awesome. It has like little cartridges that you put in it, but it's like real nondescript. It's just like almost looks like a small humidifier. There's no smoke or anything like that. You just push a button and they're like, they're gone like 20 really? Feet. And it is glorious.
Is it battery operated or does it plug into the wall?
They're rechargeable.
Okay, I guess you just said that.
Yeah, so no.
I should try that.
Yeah, I'll send you the link. And I've been really terrible uploading the disaster relief links lately, and I'll go ahead and apologize for that. I have been in a lot of pain, so I will make sure I get back on that again in case anybody's been wondering.
I'm gonna mail you something bad if you don't stop apologizing.
But yeah, so it's called Thermacell. It's awesome. It looks like a little humidifier. You put a little cartridge in there. It doesn't smell, doesn't do nothing. And you just turn it on and you can actually enjoy outside again, which is fun because we have turtles visiting us now.
Oh my God, I know. Well, it was a Holiday World. You sent me a picture of one. So did you cute. Ever figure out for sure what kind it was?
I didn't. Cody's boss got back to us again because I sent a picture with his head out further. And he's like, yeah, I was wrong. So I think it's some yellow something, blah, blah, blah. I don't remember. It's very cute and adorable. And he was fast.
Wow.
So.
That's crazy. Does that happen to you a lot?
Turtles?
Yeah.
Turtles, frogs, herons. Oh, they all just hang out.
That's cool.
I mean, I'm sure it's a Louisiana thing, but I like to think that I'm Snow White.
You are. Oh, no, you absolutely are.
Because they all come to my door.
You are. I can vouch for that. You have extremely Snow White energy.
And we bunnies. Remember the bunnies?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We
saw a cute bunny here the other day.
Oh, there's lots of nature here. It makes me happy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's mine. That's all I have this week. And I want to get this fucking baby out.
Well, when it comes out, your first one back, you can have
that will be
getting that baby out is your disaster.
Oh, it's gonna be amazing. So, but yeah, I'm glad we got to squeeze in some more episodes because I was crawling up a wall. I hate not, you know, well, what
we might get to squeeze in one more. We'll see.
I know if I'm not squeezing out a baby, I'm squeezing in a podcast.
So, you need to cross stitch that on a pillow.
Oh, Wally. Wally, can you embroider something for me? So, but yeah, until then, I guess sweet dreams or no dreams.
Sweet dreams or no dreams.
Hey, Horrible Ghouls. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your personal MarkSafe moment, you can send it to us at MarkSafePodcast@gmail.com. Please give our podcast a rate, review, and subscribe, and tell your buddies about us too. That goes a long way. If you want to further elevate your support, check out our MarkSafe Patreon page, where we have shoutouts, goodies, and some bonus content in the works. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Thanks again, and as always, stay safe.